might, I'm comfortable saying I'd like us to be able to continue to exercise a degree of flexibility that correlates with compatibility.
But does it correlate with consistency with a master plan or?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we have. I don't think I'm comfortable saying throw out the master plan. If they're MPDUs, forget the master plan. I don't want to say on height.
I'm trying to understand how what's being said differs with what the staff is saying. Maybe I'm not getting something.
Well, I'm not entirely sure. Tell me what your recommendation is on height. I mean, just conceptually, I need to deal with them separately. So tell me about height and then tell me about density.
Height, building height, basically, and the language in here is where a lot of people have heartburn, is to the extent necessary to achieve all required MPDUs on site.
You're recommending that we waive height to infinitely to achieve MPDUs. Is that your recommendation? What's your recommendation?
To the maximum in the zone.
Okay, regardless of what's in the master plan. Yeah. Right.
Up to the maximum in the zone.
But it would still be by the amount necessary?
Yes.
And that would be our judgment, what's necessary?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's still there.
You don't just automatically get to go to the maximum in the zone. But I like where you're going.
I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable with the amount necessary because what's necessary... The necessary all turns on the economics of it.
Right.
We get into this, what comes first. The economics are driven by whatever the rules are. That's how much you pay for the land. The necessary part always makes me...
Wendy, are you suggesting that we would accept the staff recommendation on density, but leave the master plan height limits intact? Noting that they're waivable anyway already under existing law.
Well, they're not waivable. They're not binding.
I guess I'm a little confused. Where did the phrase "as necessary" come into play, other than verbiage? It's not a part of what's written here.
Yeah, actually, if you look on page,
I'm looking at the approval recommendation language on page 8. Where does it say "as necessary"?
It's in the actual text itself.
Oh, in the actual text. Okay.
Yes, right. It's in the text itself, which is attachment.
Page 3.
Attachment 3, I think. Attachment 3.
What do I think? Without drafting language, I think on height,
Remember, you can, we can just say we have an issue here. We think we want some flexibility, but we want some criteria as well, and this needs to be worked on over the next couple of weeks.
I mean, I would say, obviously, it doesn't go above the zoning height.
Right.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that. And you don't get height if you don't need it. I agree with that.
The amount of the increase.
The amount of the increase
needs to be further discussed.
And
is this for density
with height?
For height.
This is height. Any increase must be, compatible.
Maybe we can work it out in committee.
Compatibility isn't all that much more specific than
more consistent with the master plan. I mean, that's the normal language you see throughout the zoning code. It doesn't have to be exactly the same. It just has to have enough consistency, which, in other words, is not double or triple or...
All right. So maybe, say, we believe there is already a degree of flexibility with respect to height. And I am uneasy about...
I think we should punt.
Yeah.
And we can punt, because we're in a point in the process where we don't... lose that much.
Well, the council is likely to say, quite frankly, we understand that you have a degree of flexibility. The drafted language in the bill suggests quite clearly we're not satisfied with the degree of discretion you already exercise as a matter of custom.
Bottom line,
there are
at least four members of the board, including myself, who are nervous about this notion of taking height to the full limit of the zone. But some of us are not willing to say, not ready to reject it altogether. So that says to me, we need to work on it some more. Bring us some other options.
Well, and it is an element of proportionality. I get it that saying 22% of that, although I don't quite, I don't do the math all that well, but I think someone could figure out what 22% of 50 feet is.
Yeah.
I think it would be along the, would be
about one
11
story.
Feet.
It's one story.
And so that doesn't strike me as wildly out of line. That provides some limit so that, I mean, the notion of going from 50 to 100 is very different than going 50 to 60. It's just.
All right. Any objection to just saying this needs further study?
Well, I would just hope, though, especially maybe we're going to talk about it again, but the notice issue, the notice to people on the master plan, that if the differences are so great, how are people supposed to know? That's what is unique to me about this, that this has not happened before. There's always some link between the zone and the sector or master plan that makes them in sync. This allows them to be completely out of sync the way it's written. I mean, even staff's recommendation, the density limit in a master plan may be exceeded by the amount of any MPDU density bonus.
Would it help you if we, I recommend that when we do transmit our comments, that when we do that summary, which talks in terms of issues and concerns that we have, that the notice issue, it be identified that it was raised by you as something in terms of
And also, let me just say, I don't know how we're going to write it, but there should be, in my mind, in terms of the presentation, a big distinction between the original text and what staff has recommended, because what staff has recommended are actually major changes to the original text.
Sure.
I mean, when you say approval with, you know, modifications, that's kind of putting it mildly. It's proving the sense of it with major, major changes. And so we've been talking about their changes, and I think we're not too far apart. But if we were comparing this
approval with substantial modifications.
Yeah. Substantial underlying bullet. But if we were just talking about the original recommendation and what that does to the master plan, that's a huge difference. Then their recommendation was you got the full density in the zone plus the density bonus in contravention of the master plan.
Well, no, clearly that's, we're against that.
Yes. Okay.
I'll tell them that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, now, is a majority of the board comfortable with the staff recommendation on density increase?
Yes, I am.
And there it is proportionate.
There it is
to the master plan limitation.
So
yes.
You get 22%.
22% on whatever it is.
All right. Yeah. I think we're done with that one then. Attached units. Recommendation is.
Where are you on that one?
That's the fourth row, fifth row.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, we're back to the cheat sheet.
Back to the cheat sheet. Fifth row.
Our recommendation on that is to approve the up to 100% of the total number of dwelling units in a one-family residential zone to consist of the duplex townhomes or other one-family attached, noting that the development has to be compatible with the existing proposed adjacent development, but also noting that the MPDUs need to be provided on site. And where we're throwing around the idea of possible additional provisions as well, But that was more discussion. We're still sort of working through that terminology.
In the zones where this could come up, is it likely that the MPDUs would ever be built off-site?
No.
Then why do you need this?
Point of clarification, I guess.
It wasn't
related to the buyout. It was related to getting more MPDUs. If you can further relax the standards, you could get more units on the more total units on the property, and thus more MPDUs. The question is, what is, in my mind anyway, is what is the benefit that you need to get in terms of additional MPDUs in order to waive those standards regarding the mix of units?
Well, since everyone is required to have MPDUs if they're above 35 units, doesn't this essentially mean that we're just abrogating the existing standard? And
well, the way it's written, it clearly presents a problem, because someone could argue that if they provide any MPDU on site, they get to waive the standards. And that's why we're opposed to it from that perspective.
We are. Okay. Well, you are.
Well, that's why we, in our, it wasn't clear in the staff memo, but in the cheat sheet, when we said additional provisions.
What does that mean?
That was what we were discussing earlier. We think there should be some requirement that you get additional MPDUs.
Sliding scale.
Okay. Out of granting the waiver of the unit mix requirements.
Are you relying on the sliding scale that they provided in the legislation?
I don't think they provided.
No, we have to create it. So if you're just doing 12.5%, you wouldn't necessarily get any increase in the number of attached units. You have to do better than that.
That's really where the debate is. Let's say the project could get under the existing standards for what the mix of units has to be, they could get 50 units. Of those, 12.5% have to be MPDUs. If the standards were relaxed so that they could be all attached, maybe they could get a total of 60 units instead of 50, of which 12.5% would have to be MPDUs. Is that enough of a gain to relax the standards, or must it be something more significant than that?
Am I reading something incorrectly then? Page 3 of 0414. Where it talks about the percentages based upon the zone, that's not what you're making reference to?
No, that's not the sliding scale. This is the current standard.
So my question is, are you talking in terms of using this as a starting point for implementation of a sliding scale or development of a sliding scale on our part?
Yes, I guess we could. I mean, to me, the more critical element of the sliding scale is what your increase in MPDUs is, but it could be tied back to
this language.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, are we comfortable with the staff recommendation?
Well, staff recommendation clarifies that there needs to be a sliding scale, but I think I have a more fundamental question. But I think, Commissioner Perdue, did you have a point you wanted to pursue? John, isn't it possible under some circumstances right now to take an R60 or an R90 zone, R200 zone, and convert it to all townhouses through the use of floating zones?
Well, you could, but maybe a better example would be cluster zones that have more flexibility. You could have all townhouses in. If you take an R60 and you convert it to cluster, you could have 100% townhouses.
What about R90 or R200?
Same.
I think that's an important point that needs to be made in any presentation. There may be different technical requirements under the zone. But I think that the point we're starting from, I'm starting from a point that right now in a single-family residential zone, under the right circumstances, you can have all attached units.
Well, clearly, if you have make their environmental finding, you can do that.
And also for some MPDU requirements already?
Not the MPDU requirements.
What are the other conditions under which you could have all attached?
I believe it's cluster. We've got to make sure.
But I think, you know, what Charlie's point is what are we really gaining unless there's some sliding scale of extra MPDUs?
Well, I assume
I don't see what the legislation's achieving.
I assume that my position is that there'd have to be some sliding scale for additional MPDUs because it's conceivable this could be all townhouses without clustering.
Right.
As the proposal is written, in which case density would be higher than it would under the clustering type of provisions that are now available in the R60, R90, and R200 zones.
Right, and I want to point out, and I know we'll talk about this when we get to the buyout thing, but one of the most disturbing things about the way this thing is written is that it always just talks about you can do this in order to achieve them, but you don't necessarily have to build them. And that's one of the problems I have with this. There's no point in allowing all this extra density, and then they all turn out to be market units, and there's a buyout.
That's a drafting issue.
We said clearly that you don't get any of the things we were talking about, except the very first one dealing with building coverage.
No.
You don't get any of these unless you commit at the time your preliminary plan is approved that you will build all the MPDUs on site. And if you don't, then your preliminary plan is not valid anymore.
Well, because there has to be a next step.
That's what we said at the
beginning. What happens when they come with their agreement from DHCA? Because the way
they won't, they're not going to go out and
go ahead.
That has to be changed.
They have to make a choice when they're here. If they want to have the option of a buyout, then they can't use any of these new liberal provisions.
But see, we're going to have to draft something that really says that, because nothing says that now.
Well, that's why we're here. Offering amendments to the council bill, and that's one of the big ones.
We have the teeth.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Do we do the last one?
What did we decide about the next one? We're okay with it?
Yes, I think we're right. In agreement.
The last one is right-of-way width of a tertiary road.
It's the same
any
issue.
Problems
same issue as the bottom one above it, and I think the same result from that standpoint.
Okay.
Or the stand.
Okay.
And then there's the
then finally, the issue of, I mean, in a way we may have already answered this because with what I just said, which is that the involvement that we want in the buyout process is that when you come to us, if you commit that you won't buy out, we'll give you all of these more liberal provisions that boost your density and the number of market units you can have. If you choose not to avail yourself of that, then go talk to DHCA, and it's between you and them, as it is currently.
At what point is it that we would get the opportunity to see what's being proposed? Are you talking about its preliminary plan?
Preliminary plan, yes.
Okay, and so are there situations where a development can go forth without a preliminary plan?
Sure.
And will those situations have the possibility of MPDU-related activity associated with them?
Yes, because you can have voluntary MPDUs now.
So
I suppose it's possible. Those would be rare, I would think, because you've got the lotting requirement cases, but you could have, I guess, examples.
Voluntary is going to get – they're going to volunteer a lot more if they can get this huge density, especially if we don't work out the buyout thing.
But you still might need a preliminary plan even if it's voluntary. There is a loophole there. I think there probably are some cases where
– it's not going to happen often.
Yeah.
Can't cover every contingency.
Okay.
I have a recommended sort of approach to what we might say to the council.
Okay.
Might begin, as we've discussed, by articulating our goal of creating more actual MPDUs. The various ZTAs that are before us try to achieve this through a variety of propose changes that increase flexibility with respect to development standards and land use standards. It seems to me that one thing we might note after saying that is that what motivates these flexibility is the need to make projects more economically viable with the NPDs. It's about the money. And as the council staff itself noted, there are other ways to deal with money, as in money. Meaning tax rebates. If the problem is that they're not economically viable with the MPDUs, it's not inconceivable that one addresses that directly through a variety of other programs. And there actually is some economic justification for that, given that the benefits of MPDUs are countywide, not location-specific. So it just highlights that all this land use stuff is about trying to make it economically viable, and that there are other ways to achieve that. Okay, but to the extent you want to achieve economic viability through changes in land use, then I think there's a couple of general principles that have been articulated. One is that it is important that we be sensitive to certainty and predictability, particularly with respect to master plans. And so whatever the rules are, have to honor the commitment of the county to transparency and certainty and predictability. And second, that we have to be sure that we're actually going to get what we're purporting to, we're going to get in exchange.
Housing. We're going to get housing.
We're going to get the stuff. So those are sort of general propositions. And I think a couple of things flow from that concern about consistency and predictability. One is that it be clear how much what the outer limits of flexibility are. The people need to know that. And I think what we've talked about here is a sense that the flexibility ought to be in some sense proportionate to what we're getting, kind of a rough proportionality. And that was the problem on the height limit, that it's not, we need to figure out a way that it's, that they're roughly proportional. So those are general propositions. Then we can go through the various techniques of flexibility that we've talked about and what we think about those and what we think about the conditions. And then I would suggest that at the very end we highlight the point linking, saying something like, if the board is given authority to grant relief from certain land use requirements, and if you want to take it out of our hands, make it automatic, that's a different matter. But if we're going to be given discretion, and if buyouts are permitted, then the procedure has to be structured so that we don't get a situation that it's granted on the expectation of on-site and then their subsequent events. Note, some of the proposed legislation seems to do this, and that's a problem. So I wouldn't lead by saying you screwed up the drafting. It's just...
It wasn't planned.
Right, but it's kind of coming back to it at the end, saying here's the problem. You have to be very clear, otherwise we get caught expecting
whipsawed.
Something's going
to... We don't want to say whipsaw. That's not,
yeah, but,
that's
but granting
not nice
some,
enough. But.
Granting something that we turn out not to get it back. And we can't solve that just to say it has to be drafted so that this does not occur.
And I also think...
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Discussion on the motion.
Yes. I do support this motion, and Wendy did anticipate... another point that I was going to raise, she says it a little more generally, but by dealing with the master plan issue, I don't have to raise an issue I was going to raise, which is if you stick with the council's proposal, I think you should eliminate the TSM and the TSR zones from the amendment package, because those zones are creations of the master plan, and they have no place in a zoning scheme that ignores master plans. So, but what I was going to say, since I tend to like to push the envelope, is in the world I would create, really the planning board should be in charge of all of this. Just the very discussion that we just had about the kind of trade-offs that we would like to make is what we could do in a project, and we could have done it in our master plan, already thinking ahead. Then the project comes along, and we make the trade-offs. I personally am opposed to buyouts. I agree with the council staff recommendation, no buyouts unless it's elderly housing and special needs. But if there are going to be buyouts, one, I agree with what Wendy said, that it would all be done as one package so that we can't be whipsawed. Secondly, I think we should be considering proposing, the council staff proposed that we coordinate with DHCA. I think we should propose more than that, that we should determine the whole plan. We should decide if there are any buyouts. And once there are buyouts, we can hand them over to DHCA. They'll have a formula for how much money they're supposed to get. I agree with Sharon Suarez's recommendation that we recommend that a certain portion of the money would go to MPDUs. But we would decide the MPDUs. We decide the height, the density, the setbacks, the lot coverage, the green space, the amenities, the compatibility, and the consistency with the master plan, because that's our job, and we're good at it. And we often evaluate the economics of the project, and we listen to people. And as Allison knows better than anybody here, probably, and Wendy too, but we had already made these kinds of trade-offs in Bethesda when we insisted that the MPDUs be on site. We understood maybe they couldn't do everything, and we gave a little on the amenities. And I think that's one of the reasons that we were so upset when they came back at site plan and those MPDUs were gone and they were sold out. So if you really wanted a cohesive, clear approach, just give it to us and let us handle the whole thing.
Let me react a little bit to what you're saying. Quite frankly, I don't think that's over the edge.
Well, I didn't intend to go over the edge. I was trying to maybe think outside the envelope. But
well, no, I like over the edge for you.
Okay.
I happen to agree with what you said. My question, however, is this the forum where, although I agree with everything you said, is this the forum where I want to communicate that to the county council? So I'm looking at it, I guess, from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah.
I'd have to say the answer is yes. Because they're going to act.
Yeah.
They're not going to do buyouts.
Do it now or
then
forget
again.
It.
Well, then if the answer is yes in terms of communicating that particular position, then who's that? That sounds like Jenny, but I don't see it.
She's hiding behind.
All right.
She got a little enthusiastic. All right. That's okay.
I really believe wholeheartedly that we ought to be in the position to run the program and make a determination. It makes common sense. I guess strategically I'm looking at, well, in terms
of... You said this at the beginning of the afternoon.
I'm sorry. I had it here, but you wanted to go in order, and I was trying to respect that.
Touche.
And I probably would not have listened if you had gone out of order. but still, I'm asking whether or not in terms of how we put this forth, I think it ought to be a part... Well, I hope I'm saying this correctly. Because I'm trying to really adjust this in my own mind. What is it that I'm concerned about?
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that we have this legislation, this proposed legislation that's been presented to us for comment. And when I before I did any reading, the first thing I said was, I like this. These folks are finally getting some cojones. Because the fact
can you translate? No, that's okay.
That means guts.
No, I mean,
I said because
they
recognize finally that there's a conflict between some of their policies, and this is an attempt to address some of the conflict in those policies. So I was very, very enthusiastic. Yes, after I read it, there were some concerns and there was evidence that, and this is often the case, that the council staff, in terms of how they drafted the legislation, did not necessarily consult with our staff, because if they had consulted with our staff, the conflicts that I saw would not have been there.
Right.
But I still want to give them credit for taking, for responding to the initiative and saying, let's do something. In spite of the fact that it may be flawed what they wrote, I want them to understand that we support the fact that they recognize the MPDUs, an additional MPDU stock is necessary, and that there is a flaw in the system, and they attempted to do something about it. I think that they need to still get that kind of recognition and that kind of feedback. Now, I think it can be done by collapsing what we, in fact, are, how we responded to each piece of legislation within the whole of a context.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that the whole of the context ought to incorporate what you're suggesting. It's almost like, however, that kind of thing. But for me, it's important that they it's understood that we endorse the concept of trying to maximize the MPDU stock.
For me, I guess I'm concerned about our saying to the council, we think we should be running this whole thing. I think we lose, first of all. I think they say, look, you all are you're not in the business of doing calculations about what's economically viable. You don't do that. You don't have a track record of doing that. If the calculations are mechanical, then it doesn't matter who does them.
You mean the buyout calculations?
The buyout calculations. If they're supposed to turn on detailed examination of actual financials, I don't think we actually are in a position to do that.
Just may I get the clarification? I didn't understand you to say that we should do the actual calculations, the tabulations, and et cetera, the kinds of things that are done when a decision is made. I thought you were suggesting that if there is a decision to buy out, that we, in fact, we make that decision and then send it on to them.
The decision to buy out.
To do the calculations.
The decision to buy out is one that is, at least as currently done, is about what's economically feasible. It's about the developer comes in and says, I can't make a go of it. Here, that's, as I understand it, that's what it's, the gist of what's being, when the decision is made. It's not, the buyout decision is not based on whether there's a need for units or not. It's not done. It's not done as a land use decision. It's not done as, you know, oh well, we don't actually need units in that area. That would be a land use kind of analysis. It's done as some kind of an economic analysis. So when you say we would decide that at preliminary plan, the developer is going to say, here are my financials, here's my pro forma, and we're going to say, oh come on, those construction numbers are inflated currently. The square footage, construction price on this form of construction is. I don't know what we're going to say, but I don't think we can present ourselves as being in that business.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying pre these amendments, but as you actually said yourself earlier, what these changes are about were really about money.
The
amount of green space requirement, the height. The density was in order to make things financially viable for them. We're going to be involved in this anyway. I mean, Charlie, do you get involved in any understanding of what they need when they build and make the building work?
I think Commissioner Perdue is right, that there's two calculations here. The first calculation is the one whether or not the project is feasible or whether they have to have a buyout in order for it to be feasible. We're not equipped to do that work. And I think there's a further complication, which is I don't think the developer is going to want to bring that information to you in public session for you to make that decision. So it would still have to be a staff decision. So that's the first calculation. The second calculation then, which is the easy calculation, or could be the easy calculation, is if there is a buyout, how much money does the county get out of the buyout? And that's what the bill tries to come up with, a better approach and more money. But the critical question is whether there's a buyout in the first place, and we are not equipped to do that. It would have significant staffing implications. I think if you wanted to go that way, you could suggest a process where DHCA would have to make that decision before the plan comes to the planning board. That might be one way to do it. I suspect there'll be opposition from the development community, just from the point of view that they don't have enough information at that particular point in the process to make that calculation.
That won't need to occur, because under the motion that is before us, we've already said that the developer, when he or she applies, has to make a choice as to whether they're going to buy out or
right.
not.
So they could make a choice that they're not going to buy out.
Right. But I'm responding to the suggestion that what we should say to the council is we should run this whole show. One, I don't think we should run the whole show in the sense that piece that Charlie's outlined. Nor do I think we should say to council that we should. I think we should say to council, you have to structure it so that we are not put in the position of waiving, assuming X is going to happen, and then somebody else undoing X.
What Wendy's
saying, and I can agree with that, is my your thesis sentence is different from my thesis sentence.
I heard you say.
Well, it is. But it's still the same point, in the sense that they decide beforehand and they've got to make a decision, and then we're the ones who have the control over, you know, the location of the MPDUs, what kind of bedrooms, the height, the density, the setbacks. I mean, so we can work to make the whole thing work. Really, otherwise, because what Charlie's saying is just exactly how we could end up back where we started before, that they say that they're going to do it, and now, oh my gosh, they've gotten deeply into the project, they realize they can't afford it, and they go get the buyouts, and when they come back for site plan, we're screwed again.
Okay. Oh, but they can't do that under the scenario that we propose, which is that they can only use these standards if there's no buyout. That's the hammer that you have.
Okay.
That
Wendy's
prevents
motion,
that from happening.
Wendy's motion is still before us.
I'll second it.
It's already been seconded.
Okay.
All in favor of the vice chair's motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? That is unanimous.
Just for the record.
Thank you very much.
You want to restate it?
No.
I'm working on restating it here for the benefit of staff.
Staff will work that out.
For some reason, they found my notes.
Thank you, everybody. I knew that was going to be a doozy, and it was. And apologies to everyone who's been waiting for other matters. But we will try to get through the rest of the agenda very expeditiously. Staff, take note, very expeditiously. Number 12, local map amendment for Tri-Capital Partners, Greencastle Road. Any speakers? All right. Staff, applicant, there are no speakers, so
it'll be brief.
You can be real brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Carlton Gilbert, Development Review Division. The subject matter before you this afternoon is local map amendment number G821. The applicant, Tri-Capital Partners, LLC, is requesting the classification of 2 acres of land from the R60 zone to the R8 zone for up to 16 townhouses located at 3961 Green Castle Road. This is within the Fairland Master Plan. Just briefly, this is the proposed site. It's located in the eastern portion of Montgomery County. It's located west of Green Castle Road. Northern boundary is Roby Road. Western boundary is Sheffield Manor Drive. Also east of the subject property is the Fairland Recreational Park. This is the subject property of regular shape shown here. It is presently zoned R60, developed with a single-family dwelling. Although the main and usable space of the lot is the regular shape portion of the site, which is what presently be used for development of the townhouses. The L-shaped area, or the rear portion of the lot, is heavily wooded, and it's steep. It slopes steeply downward towards a stream, and is located in the stream valley buffer, which will be preserved, and thus this area will not be used for development of townhouses.
I have a question for the staff. Does this proposal meet all environmental requirements?
Yes, it does.
Does it meet all water quality requirements?
Yes, it has, Commissioner.
Does it meet all traffic requirements?
Yes, it has, Commissioner.
Then I'm satisfied. If the applicant's willing to agree to all the conditions, I feel no further need to pursue this. I think the staff report's quite clear that all the others' development in this area is.
Mr. Connors, introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, William Commoners, the law firm of Holland & Knight, representing the applicant. With me is Mr. Blumberg from SS Site Solutions Incorporated. Mr. Robinson, the only thing that I would say in response to that is, obviously, we're going to demonstrate how we meet those requirements when we come back with the preliminary plan and site plan, because this is just for the rezoning of the property. We will have to meet those standards at that time.
Fair enough.
Yes, we believe we can accommodate all of them in this plan. This property is recommended for this zone in the master plan. It was the only property which was not rezoned during the sectional map amendment, and we agree with the staff's recommendations and their report. The only thing that I would say is that there was a report from the community-based planning team that I think was inadvertently not attached to the staff report, and it also recommends favorably on this, as you might imagine, and I'll give that to Mr. You have it in the record. It's just not in your packet.
Thank you. If there are no further questions by my colleagues, Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the staff recommendation.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 That is unanimous. Thank you. We recommend approval. 13, 14, and 15, three special exceptions for PetSmart on Bradley Boulevard in Bethesda.
For the record, I'm Margaret Rifkin with the Community-Based Planning Division. I'd first like to ask, in light of the time constraints, would you like a presentation or would you like to go straight to the applicant?
Has everybody read the packet?
Yes, I'm satisfied.
We'll go straight to the applicant.
Ms. Rifkin had handed out to you some revised conditions. We're in agreement with the conditions as worded. The only issue that we would like to discuss with you is one dealing with item number 5. That's dealing with the capacity for dogs and cats for the veterinary grooming and boarding. I handed to you a chart that also would just need to be revised within the staff report. What we're proposing is that for the number to be 250 rather than 200. So basically, we're proposing that condition number 5 be revised. So it says, do not exceed a maximum capacity for dogs and cats for veterinary adoption, grooming, and boarding of 250. And then take out the last line up. In addition to the 200, 20 maximum may be provided for adoption. So we're talking about 30 additional pets.
And how does the staff feel about this revised condition?
We would prefer to see the condition that we recommended. We reviewed this with the understanding that the capacity was going to be 200. It was clarified for us very late, and we felt that at the least we would like to allow the adoption area to be 20 maximum so that those adoption spaces do not come out of the maximum of 200. So we're actually looking at the 220.
So you're at 220 and you're at 250.
Right, and our reasoning
and
was... Our reasoning was twofold. One, we conducted our review under the assumption that these were the numbers. We do have some concerns that the uses proposed are not typical of general retail in the CBD, and therefore you're not going to have people arriving to deliver pets by transit. Pets would need to be in cages or in some sort of containers to be used on transit. So we're expecting a lot more drop-off and pick-up by private vehicle. And we do have some concerns about the amount of flow that would cause at peak times. So we're more comfortable with the 200 as we had originally reviewed. Okay. But we do not want the number to discourage the adoption service. So we wanted that to be a separate number.
All right. So tell us why you feel you need 250.
Thank you. For a couple of reasons. When we were discussing with Margaret, we went back to PetSmart and said, you know, listen, there's a confusion with regards to this chart. We want to be clear as to what your actual numbers are. And they went back and looked at, historically, their other uses, and they found that on 5 days of the year, there's a maximum of 250 animals that are in the PetSmart, in the boarding, grooming, adoption, training area. On 40 days of the year, it's between like 225 animals that are within that in the facility. Over most of the year, there's only between like 100 and 150 animals that are there. But during that peak period, they need to have that flexibility. And I think that the way that the condition for number 4 has been modified, as staff had suggested, deals with that's an additional provision that was not required prior to her having these additional numbers. And I believe that that addresses some of those issues. Also, from an operations perspective, all of PetSmart's operations, and as you saw, I mean, they've gone into detail with their ventilation and their filtration, and they've agreed to having these spaces for drop-off to help with facilitation of animals that might need if there was not parking available. So we believe that operationally we've already dealt with this whole issue, and in fact that's how the whole thing was designed with this in mind. That's basically what they've always proposed. It just was a confusion with staff as to what the number was.
Roberta, do we have any speakers?
No, we don't.
No, okay.
Staff, this seems to be a transportation issue. What's the rationale for... Was the original traffic study or analysis done on the assumption that the transit-oriented guidelines would apply?
Well, the original traffic study, assuming retail of 125,000, more than 125,000 square feet, and we have some available data from other animal clinics in Montgomery County, and we're based on that, we believe that the trips generated by PetSmart here would be less than, overall, less than if all of that area was used by retail.
Well, if it's less than overall area was used by retail, then what's the objection to the higher 250 pet figure? I mean, that's internally inconsistent, Margaret.
Well, actually, I think what you're observing is that there's a disagreement in judgment about the impact of having a boarding area in the CBD. And we feel that logic tells us that people are going to drive in with their pets and drive out, that there's going to be peak periods for pet drop-off, and we've checked with other boarding places to get information on those peak periods. So we're expecting that there's going to be more congestion at particular times than others based on people's personal patterns, and that we don't have any experience with having a boarding facility in a CBD. PetSmart does not either. They only... urban setting that they have for PetSmart is in Chicago, and there is no boarding facility at that
point. Let me ask the question again. Is there any reason to believe that the peak period for people dropping off their pets is going to be higher than the peak period for the alternative retail facility that would have been here?
No.
All right. Then I see no basis for the objection to the higher 250 pet figure, which is peak equals peak. If it's going to be the same for a retail function that was the alternative use of the space, then it seems to me they've met the standard.
Well, one of the most important reason for us to believe that, first of all, we have looked at some other pet shops in around Montgomery County, and we looked at their traffic data, and that's one reason. Another one is that for what we call the animal boarding is that the timing is very scattered throughout the day for this kind of use, and it is used during the holidays and also maybe weekends. It's not during the peak hours of the weekdays.
So there's no pattern. Therefore, that normally people come by and board their pets 7
exactly.
to 9 in the morning
that's
and
good.
4 to 8,
exactly.
7 in the evening. So actually maybe there's less concentration if we have a pet
exactly.
boarding facility than if we have a standard retail facility.
That's right.
I would have moved that we accept the, for myself, I'm satisfied to go to 250 pets because it doesn't appear that there be any material impact on the traffic.
Is there a second? I'll second it. Any further discussion? All right. The motion is to approve the recommend approval of the special exception with a maximum of 250. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
I have to abstain.
Sorry. But you're abstaining.
Yes.
All right.
Only because of the fact that I wasn't here to hear the whole thing.
No, I'm going to support it.
All right. My vote of 3-0 with Commissioner Bryant. You want to vote, Commissioner Perdue? Commissioner Bryant and Commissioner Perdue abstaining because they were out of the room. The recommendation is for approval.
Thank you very much.
And I will say, it is actually, as far as I'm concerned, fabulous to see a retail establishment that is normally associated with the big box sprawl retail mall locating in a CBD. I think that's a very good thing. Because
actually, I anticipate.
Maybe hopefully you will start doing it more often.
We'll try.
Because CBDs is where we like to have our retail concentrated.
Hopefully all those apartments, all those people that are coming to Bethesda or surrounding areas will walk their pets to your facility, some of them instead of driving.
Better put the curb your pet sign up.
16, a zoning text amendment to allow a waiver of certain planned development zone standards, introduced by Councilmember Perez.
For the record, Greg Russ from Development Review. CTA 04-15 is recommended to allow a waiver of certain planned development zone standards to facilitate the preservation, reuse, or redevelopment of a historic district. Sites classified in the planned development zone that are not within or close proximity to a CBD or transit station zone must comply with certain setback requirements if the site adjoins land recommended in a master plan for one-family residential development. This ZTA would allow setback requirements, allow a waiver of setback requirements if development of a site in the PD zone would facilitate, again, preservation, reuse, or redevelopment of a property in a historic district. The proposed text amendment would have initial impact to address a potential development issue for the National Park Seminary property located in Forest Glen, which is part of a historic district. Let's see. CTA 04-15 would apply mostly to property proposed for PD zoning in the future. This includes property recommended for PD zoning and approved master plans and properties where the owner might apply for PD zoning without the benefit of a master plan recommendation for such zoning. The PD zone is a floating zone. A property may be approved for such zoning if the proposed development is consistent with the purposes and standards of the zone and compatible with the surrounding uses. Staff, actually, if you've looked at the text amendment language, staff has no objection to the proposed text amendment language with the exception of a couple of modifications. Staff recommends that the proposed language in Section 59C 7.15D2 be modified to refer to adjoining properties rather than a singular property. Just a clarification there. And staff recommends that proposed Section 59C 7.15D2 also include language stating that for waivers of limit on maximum building height, the planning board must also make a no adverse impact finding, and a finding that the waiver will facilitate historic preservation, which is similar to it's basically including the building height language with the other language and making it consistent with the other language. There was one other issue in here that came up as related to other. I think there have been other projects that have come through in recent years that there was some confusion on language, which is 59C-7.15C1, which although is not specifically part of this the reason for this text amendment, it is part of this section and it can be included as part of that. And that is, there needs to be just a clarification under 59C 7.15C1. The requirements of subsection B1, where a planned development zone adjoins land for which the area master plan recommends a one-family zone. Under subsection C1, a waiver of B1 may be permitted if the area master plan recommends other than a one-family detached zone for the property. When you look at those two sections, it really doesn't make sense. And staff believes that the word zone should have actually been the word use. And if you look at our attachment 1, it's attachment 1 and page 3 of that attachment, under C on page 3 there, we just replace the word zone with use to make it, actually have it make sense in terms of the overall.
Yeah, we understand that. Thank you. We have two speakers, Wayne Goldstein and Steve Robbins. Come on up. Mr. Goldstein, you're first.
I'm Wayne Goldstein, president of Montgomery Preservation, Inc., here to strongly support the ZTA. It's absolutely essential that the ZTA be passed so that the National Park Seminary site can be redeveloped and the dilapidated historic buildings can be restored. It's all part of a package to save this important site, and so we're all for this and look forward to the planning board recommending approval, the county council approving it, and then quickly moving forward so that we lose as little of the original historic fabric of these complex as we possibly can. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins.
Good afternoon. Steve Robbins with the law firm of Lurch, Hurley & Brewer. With me is Natalie Bach, who's with the Alexander Company. And they are the selected developers of the National Park Seminary property. I wanted to give Natalie sort of a feel of what it's like to be before the planning board. She sat through all that MPDU stuff. She's a pro now.
We don't want you to be intimidated.
No,
I hope you're well rested.
So she's doing fine. I submitted testimony. I'm not gonna go through it. This zoning text amendment is essential to the swift and appropriate development of the National Park Seminary property. And I think that staff has done an excellent job at describing what the zoning text amendment is all about. And I certainly appreciate Mr. Goldstein's overwhelming support on not only this matter but this project. We're very excited about it. We've filed our zoning case, and we're rolling along. So,
if you have any problems with staff's suggested clarifications.
No, I agree with staff's suggestion. I also do agree that I think there is a – in the section that it doesn't relate to what I'm here for, I do think there is some a problem that Greg is trying to address. So, yes, I'm okay with that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to move approval.